Judges chapter 9, as we're going through the book of Judges. Last week we had finished the story of Gideon as he defeated the Midianites. And after the defeat, the Israelites came to Gideon and wanted to make him king. And he refused the offer and said, "No, no, no. I'm not going to be your king. My family's not going to be your king. The Lord is your king. You know, you're to follow him. He'll direct you. He'll guide you. He'll protect you. He'll take that place. And you know, I'm not going to be your king." And so, let's start with chapter 8 and get a running head start into 9 because it ties together. Verse 28 of chapter 8. "Thus Midian was subdued before the children of Israel so that they lifted their heads no more. And the country was quiet for 40 years in the days of Gideon." So after the battle with Midian, Gideon apparently lived another 40 years and the land was quiet. They weren't being raided as they had been by the Midianites. You know, the land had peace. Israel was at peace. Then Jerubbaal. Now, if you remember, Jerubbaal was the name that his father had given him way back in the beginning of the story of Gideon, when the Lord told Gideon to tear down the altar and the idols to Baal that were on his dad's property. And so he tore them down, and the people of the town who were worshiping Baal on his father's property came the next morning and said, "You know, where's our altar? where's our idols? Who took them and sacrificed to Jehovah, you know, with the wood of the idol? What's going on here?" And they found that it was Gideon. And so they went to Gideon's dad and said, "Bring him out here. We want to put him to death because he's destroyed our altar." And Gideon's dad said, "Look, if Baal was so all-powerful, he would have defended himself. You know, you don't have to defend him." And so he renames his son, or gives him a nickname of Jerubbaal, which means the one who Baal contends with or fights with. You know, and so throughout the next couple of chapters, there's this battle, of course, between Gideon on the Lord's side and the Midianites, who were, idol worshipers, and Israel had turned and was worshiping because they hadn't driven out the Canaanites out of Canaan, out of the promised land. They struggled all along, of course, with worshiping the idols of the people around them. And so, here again, he's called Jerubbaal, the one who contends with Baal, or the one that Baal contends with. And as we get into chapter 9, it refers to Gideon a couple of times, but it does not refer to him as Gideon, but as Jerubbaal, the contender with Baal. And we'll see why that is as we get into it. But it says, "Then Jerubbaal, the son of Joash, went and dwelt in his own house." So he settled back in Orpha. "Now Gideon had 70 sons who were his offspring, for he had many wives." So he had many wives, and he had 70 sons by these many wives. Now, in the Old Testament, we see several examples of men who have had many wives. It never seems to turn out well. We had a brother from Africa that attended the church for quite a while. And in Africa, in the towns and villages where he lived, it was legal to have multiple wives. And he said, his dad told him when he was growing up, he says, "If you don't learn anything else from me, learn this. Only marry one woman." Because his dad had two wives. And he says, it doesn't work. So Gideon has several wives, 70 kids. If you remember earlier in the chapter, when he refused to be king, he said, "But do me this favor." He said, "Bring me the gold earrings that you've gotten from the Midianites and all." And it turned out to be, in dollars and cents, approximately $850,000 worth of gold that they delivered to him. So he was able to build a big enough house for 70 kids. So he was probably the wealthiest guy in the town. But he had 70 sons that were his offspring, for he had many wives. And he had a concubine. A concubine is a servant girl who also serves as a mistress. And his concubine, who was in Shechem, she didn't live there in Orpha. She lived in Shechem. And that'll come into play in the next chapter. She also bore him a son, whose name he called Abimelech. Abimelech means, my father is king. Now, I kind of think, this is my own speculation, Gideon didn't want to be king. But at this point, he probably left the naming of his sons to the moms, you know. And so here, this concubine, you know, all moms have ambitions for their sons, you know. It's just a natural thing. You want your sons to do well and excel. And this, again, this is my speculation. But the fact that Gideon had turned away from being king, I can't see him naming his son, my father is the king. But I can see his mom doing that, you know, and having ambition for her son. So, again, that's my speculation. But his name means my father is king. And, again, that'll come into play in the next chapter. Now, Gideon, the son of Joash, died at a good old age. We don't know how old he was, but we know at least 40 years of his life was lived in peace after he fought with the Midianites. He was buried in the tomb of Joash's father in Orpha of the Abiezrites. That was his family's name in the tribe of Manasseh there. And so it was, as soon as Gideon was dead, the children of Israel again played the harlot with the Baals and made Baal-berith their god. Baal-berith means God of the Covenant. You know, Jehovah was their covenant God. He had made covenants with Abraham and with Isaac and with Jacob. You know, he had made a covenant with and promises to Moses and all. And so he was the covenant God. But now they've rejected Jehovah, the God of the Covenant, and made Baal, this false god, their god of the covenant. You know, and so they have totally rejected God and brought in the Baal worship again. And again, this is, I believe, cycle number 6 that they've gone through this over probably about a 200 plus year period at this point in the book of Judges. And thus the children of Israel did not remember the Lord their God, who had delivered them from the hands of their enemies on every side. Nor did they show kindness to the house of Jerubbaal, Gideon, in accordance with the good that he had done. And so, you know, they had pushed aside everything that Gideon had done. They had pushed aside the Lord and the worship of Jehovah and went after these Baals, you know. And again, as we've seen through the book of Judges, it never turns out well for Israel when they do this. In chapter 9, there's a couple of biblical principles that will come to play in this chapter. So I'm going to just lay them out ahead of time as we go, so that as we go through this, you'll see this. Proverbs 13:34 says, righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. And again, this we've seen this over and over again in Judges, you know, as they follow the Lord and they worship the Lord and they keep themselves on track under the judges, the Lord blesses them. You know, they're exalted. When they turn away from the Lord and start worshiping Baal, start worshiping the gods of the Canaanites, then all kinds of chaos and problems come into the nation. And so we will see now that they've rejected, at the end of chapter 8, they've rejected the Lord again, and they're following after Baal. All kinds of chaos and lawlessness comes into the nation. You know, and, you know, you can draw the parallels. We're seeing a lot of that happening in our midst, you know, in our culture going on. As society wants to reject God, they've taken, you know, the reading of the Bible out of the public schools. They've taken the Ten Commandments off of public buildings and off of out of the schools and all. Well, you know, unrighteousness, lawlessness, ungodliness, you know, wreaks havoc. And, you know, Paul talks about that to Timothy in one of his letters to Timothy, that in the last days you'll see these things happen as God is rejected. And we get closer and closer to the end. But righteousness exalts the nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. In Matthew 23:12, Jesus said, "Whoever exalts himself will be humbled." It's never a good thing to try to put yourself on a pedestal. You know, he who thinks he will stand, beware lest ye fall. I think it was Paul that wrote that. You know, and we'll see that taking place here in this chapter. Philippians 2:3 says, "Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself." So we'll see this man Abimelech, Gideon's son, through this concubine, exalting himself, placing, you know, his ambition above those of his brothers and all, and it will not bode well. So let's get into the story. Then Abimelech, who we came across in the last chapter, the son of the concubine there in Shechem. Now, to give you an idea here, we've got a couple things going on here. We talked last week about the sibling rivalries that were going on, even hundreds of years after Jacob's sons were alive, the 12 tribes. The tribes that grew out of the sons down through the history of Israel, they've still got rivalries. And so last week we saw the rivalry between Manasseh and Ephraim, who back in the history, they were the two sons of Joseph. And, you know, they had a problem right from the beginning when Jacob blessed the younger one instead of the older one. So there was issues right from the beginning with these guys. Well, they had the rivalry last week, because Gideon was from Manasseh, and he didn't invite the Ephraimites to the battle against the Midianites until the end. So they were upset about that. You know, well, why didn't you invite us in? You know, we wanted to be part of that, you know. So there was that rivalry going on. Well, it continues into this chapter. So, of course, Gideon and his family was from Manasseh, from the city of Ophrah, and it was close to the border of Ephraim. Ephraim is where Shechem is. Now, to give you a reminder about Shechem, Shechem was established back in the book of Genesis by a Canaanite named Hamor. And his name will be brought up in this. And but in the book of Joshua, as Joshua and the Israelites have taken over the land of Canaan now, Joshua gathered them in chapter 24, the Israelites in Shechem, in Joshua 24. And he gave his final address to Israel there in Shechem. And that's when he challenged them. You know, you choose whatever God you want to follow, but as for me and my house, we're going to follow the Lord. You know, and all of Israel said, well, we're going to follow the Lord just like you have. You know, he's going to be our God and we're going to keep his commandments and all. That was taking place there in Shechem. Shechem was in a valley between two mountains, Gerizim and Ebal. It was on Mount Gerizim and Ebal that six of the tribes of Israel gathered on one side of on one mountain, six tribes on the other, and they repeated the law back and forth, the blessings and the cursings of the law back and forth to each other. Shechem lay in the middle of that. Okay, so it had a rich, godly history at the time of Joshua, as we come into that. And here we'll see everything spirals downward. If you remember now, Gideon and his wives and his 70 sons dwelled in Ophrah. His concubine was from Shechem. So they're in two different tribes. Okay, so Gideon is, and his family are up here in Manasseh, and Shechem and the concubine are down in Ephraim. So you got that sibling rivalry taking place. We're going to have a sibling rivalry between Abimelech, who was considered an outcast from the other 70 because of his parentage. And there's going to be a rivalry between those two. Then Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal, went to Shechem. So he lived in Ophrah with his family, but now he goes down to Shechem to his mother's brothers. So he's going down to see his uncles. And he spoke with them and with all the family of the house of his mother's father, saying, "Please speak in the hearing of all the men of Shechem. Which is better for you, that all 70 of the sons of Jerubbaal reign over you, or that one reign over you? Remember that I am your own flesh and bone." So he goes down to Shechem into the area of the tribe of Ephraim and says, "Look, do you want Jerubbaal's 70 sons who have nothing to do with you? They're up there in Manasseh. They're part of the tribe of Manasseh. Do you want them to rule over you?" Now, they had, as far as we know, no ambition to rule. In fact, Gideon said, "We're not. My family, I'm not going to rule over you. My kids aren't going to rule over you. That's between you and God, you know." But here comes Abimelech with this, you know, he's planning this in their mind. If they're going to rule over you or I'm going to rule over you, one or the other, you know. So you want the 70 sons of Jerubbaal to rule over you, these Manassites, you know, to rule over you? I'm one of you guys, you know. I'm on your side. I'm your flesh and blood, you know. My mom was a Shechemite, you know, and probably not an Israelite. She was probably a Canaanite, you know. So, you know, even Gideon had violated the law of God in that case. And so which do you want to rule over you? And as verse 3 says, his mother's brother spoke all these words concerning him in the hearing of all of the men of Shechem. And their heart was inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, "He's our brother. You know, he's our flesh and blood." You know, they can still probably consider Gideon's family, you know, a powerful family. I mean, they were rich, you know, had the heritage of delivering Israel. You know, and so they go, "Well, if we got to have one of them rule over us, we might as well make it the one that's related to us." You know, so they chose Abimelech to rule over them because he was our brother. He's our, you know, he's our relative here. So they gave him 70 shekels of silver from the temple of Baal-berith. So they go into the temple treasury of Baal, take 70 shekels, give them to Abimelech, and he hires worthless and reckless men. He's got a band of thieves that are following him now. And they follow him. And he went to his father's house at Ophrah. And he killed his brothers, the 70 sons of Jerubbaal, on one stone. And so there was probably a large stone. And they were probably beheaded there on the stone, lined up and killed. But Jotham, the youngest son of Jerubbaal, was left because he hid himself. So somehow Jotham got away. So probably 69 were killed of the 70, and Jotham escaped. And all the men of Shechem gathered together, all of Beth Milo. Beth Milo was probably the citadel or the castle or the tower that was close by to Shechem. So if they wanted to have a fortress, if they were under attack, they would run to Beth Milo, this tower or citadel. So it was related there to Shechem. And probably the dominant or the noblemen of Shechem lived there so that they would have additional protection. And all the men of Shechem gathered together, all of Beth Milo. And they went and they made Abimelech king beside the terebinth tree at the pillar which was in Shechem. So where the Israelites had declared their allegiance to God in Joshua 24, the Shechemites are now making Abimelech king over them. And of course, there were, you know, they've paid for the killing of Gideon's sons with money from the treasury out of from Baal. They've hired these worthless, reckless guys to go do the dirty deed under Abimelech. You know, so now they're exalting him as their leader. Now, when they told Jotham, so word gets back to Jotham, the youngest son of the 70. He went and he stood on top of Mount Gerizim. So the men in Shechem are down in the valley. They're anointing Abimelech as their king. And Jotham goes to the top of Mount Gerizim. It's about 800 feet above the plain there. And he lifted his voice and he cried out. And he gives him this parable. It's kind of an interesting story. And we'll go through it, but kind of the gist of it is, he's equating the kingdom as a kingdom of trees there in Israel. There's a kingdom of trees, and they wanted to select a king. You know, so they went to this tree, and they went to that tree and all. So he's telling a parable here of what's taking place. And he cries out. So he's on the mountain. He's yelling down to these Shechemites that are anointing Abimelech. And he says, "Listen to me, you men of Shechem, that God may listen to you. The trees once went forth to anoint a king over them. And they said to the olive tree, 'Reign over us.' But the olive tree said to them, 'Should I cease giving my oil, with which they honor God and men?'" You know, the olive oil was used in worship in the tabernacle. "To go and sway over trees." And so the first tree they go to make king is the olive tree. Now the three trees that are in this parable were essential trees to the health of Israel. You know, they had the olive tree gave olive oil. You know, Jesus in the garden of Olivet was the Mount of Olives. You know, it was olive trees were there. They were a useful fruit. And so the olive tree says, "Look, should I stop giving my fruit, which blesses man and it blesses God, to sway over the other trees?" And that idea of the swaying is there's chaos. You know, should I give up being useful to the chaos of trying to rule and reign over all this mess? You know, and so the olive tree doesn't take the request. Verse 10, the trees said to the fig tree, "You come and reign over us." And again, figs were an important fruit there in the nation of Israel. "Would you come and reign over us?" And the fig tree said to them, "Should I cease my sweetness and my good fruit to go sway over trees?" And the tree said to the vine, "You come and reign over us." Of course, the vine produced grapes, you know, and that was a useful fruit there in Israel. And the vine said to them, "Should I cease my new wine, which cheers both God and men, and go sway over the trees?" And so they go to three useful fruit trees, and say, you know, "Will you reign over us?" And they all said, "No, we're blessing man, we're blessing God. We're not going to sway over and lose our usefulness just to try to, you know, reign over the trees." So then all the trees said to the bramble, these were the thorn bushes, which had no usefulness except they made good kindling wood in a fire. That was about all they were worth. You know, they weren't high enough to produce shade. There was no leaves. There was no fruit. You know, it was just a worthless bush. Then all the trees said to the bramble, "You come and reign over us." And the bramble said to the trees, "If in truth you anoint me as king over you, then come and take shelter in my shade," which was a joke because he had no shade. "But you can trust me, you know, I'll protect you, I'll take care of you. But if not, you know, if you choose me as your king, but you don't put your trust in me," basically is what he's saying here, this thorn bush, then let fire come out from the bramble. And again, that's all it was good for. And devour the cedars of Lebanon. Now, the cedars of Lebanon in the Middle East were considered the most noble of the trees. So he said, you know, if you anoint me king, this is the thorn bush talking to the other trees. If you anoint me as king, but you don't put your trust in me, then let fire come out of me and burn down the most noble of you all, you know, and destroy you. That's the parable. The parallel is here is Abimelech is the thorn bush. He's the worthless guy, you know, and he's the one that they're choosing to rule over them. So again, this is the son of Jerubbaal or Gideon calling this down upon the Shechemites as they're anointing Abimelech as king. Now he gives some commentary to his parable. Now, therefore, if you have acted in truth and sincerity in making, he's kind of being a little facetious here. He says, if you have acted in truth and sincerity in making Abimelech king, and if you have dealt well with Jerubbaal and his house and have done to him as he deserves, and we saw in the previous chapter that they didn't do what he deserves. They didn't honor Gideon. And here, you know, in this chapter, they've killed his 70 sons, or 69 of them at least. You know, so now he's being facetious. You know, he's being sarcastic. You know, if you treated the house of Gideon well, and if you gave him the honor that he deserved, and you've chosen Abimelech sincerely and in truth, he says, for my father fought for you and risked his life and delivered you out of the hand of Midian. But if you had risen up against my father's house this day, and you've killed his 70 sons on one stone, and made Abimelech, the son of his female servant, king over the men of Shechem, because he's your brother, then if you acted in truth and sincerity with Jerubbaal and with his house this day, then rejoice in Abimelech, and let him also rejoice in you. You know, if you had treated dad right, and if you treated his sons right, you know, and you acted in truth in choosing him instead of the conniving way he got in there, you know, then enjoy him as your king and let him rejoice over you. But he knows that's not the case. And they know that's not the case. So he says, but if not, then let fire come from Abimelech. Again, he's referring to his parable there of the thorn bush. You know, let fire come out of Abimelech. That's all a thorn bush is worth. Yeah, it's the only usefulness is to create fire. Let the fire come out from Abimelech and devour the men of Shechem and of Beth Milo. And let the fire come from the men of Shechem and from Beth Milo and devour Abimelech. In other words, if you guys have done this dishonorably and you've not honored God, you've not honored Gideon in all this, then destroy each other. That's what he's saying here. Let fire come out of Abimelech and destroy you, and let fire come out of Shechem and destroy Abimelech. And I like verse 21. And Jotham ran away. All right, I've delivered a message. I'm out of here. And he fled. He knew he was in hot water, but he had to get the message out. And he went to Beer and dwelt there for fear of Abimelech, his brother. And after Abimelech had reigned over Israel for 3 years, that term reign there literally means he lorded it over them. He was a tyrant. You know, he was not a benevolent king. He was in it for himself. You know, he was exalting himself. He wanted the power. He wanted the glory. And he reigned and lorded over. Of course, Peter and Jesus said, you know, that's the way the kings of the earth rule. They lord it over, but not so with you. You know, he who's to rule over you, let him be the servant of all, you know. And so Abimelech was lording it over. And it says over Israel, it's more realistically just the tribe of Ephraim and possibly Manasseh, his family's household, you know, because he had destroyed his brothers. And so it was just that limited area there of Israel that he ruled over. Verse 23. You know, God only puts up with this nonsense for a certain period of time. God sent a spirit of ill will between Abimelech and the men of Shechem. He sent an evil spirit to stir things up. And the men of Shechem dwelt treacherously with Abimelech. Now they're going to turn on Abimelech. He's, you know, he's lorded it over them. He's, you know, been a tyrant over them. You know, he didn't fulfill the promises that he came up with. You know, he was a bramble bush that gave no shade, gave no protection, as was in the parable. And so the men of Shechem, verse 23 again, dwelt treacherously with Abimelech, that the crime done to the 70 sons and their blood be laid on Abimelech, their brother, who killed them, and on the men of Shechem, who aided him in killing his brothers. Now the Lord sends in this evil spirit into the midst, and he's going to create chaos and more insanity in the town there to avenge the killing of the 70. And both the leaders of Shechem and Abimelech were complicit in this, because the leaders of Shechem had taken the money out of the treasury of Baal and given it to Abimelech to kill the brothers, so he could hire a group of men to do this. And so the Lord is going to bring the vengeance on both parties here. Verse 25, and the men of Shechem set men in ambush against him on the tops of the mountains. So probably on the top of Gerizim and the top of Ebal, you know, they put men to ambush so that if Abimelech came through, they would jump him and kill him. And they robbed all who passed by them along the way. So not only were they waiting for Abimelech, but they're robbing everybody that's going through the pass, you know. So there's lawlessness going on here. You know, this place is out of control. So it wasn't even safe to pass through the mountain pass there. And this was told to Abimelech. You know, they're laying in wait for you. You know, he had spies still in Shechem, as we'll find out. You know, he had allies still in Shechem. You know, so the word gets out that, hey, they're laying in wait for you in the mountains there. So watch yourself. Now, this roaming mercenary named Gaal, the son of Ebed, came with his brothers and went over to Shechem. And we probably heard that there's some chaos in Shechem and there's an opportunity here, you know. And so he wanders into Shechem with his brothers. He's got a band of men with him. And the men of Shechem put their confidence in him. They've lost confidence in Abimelech. They want to get rid of him. Here comes Ebed, this wandering mercenary. And they go, you know, let's put our trust in this guy, you know. And so they went out into the fields and gathered grapes from their vineyards and trod them and made merry. And they went into the house of their God. This is the Shechemites. So they harvest their grapes. They come in and they're going to have a feast. They're going to, you know, have a ceremony there at the temple of Baal. They went into the house of their God and they ate and they drank and they cursed Abimelech. So Abimelech became the focus of their worship, you know. And so Gaal, or Gaal, however you pronounce it, the son of Ebed, said, "Who is Abimelech and who is Shechem that we should serve him? Is he not the son of Jerubbaal? And is not Zebul his officer?" Now Zebul was one of the leaders there in Shechem. You know, probably the mayor, because he's called the leader of Shechem. And so he's an ally of Abimelech, and all this stuff, all this rebellion and all is going on underneath him, even though he's still an ally with Abimelech. He says, "Serve the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem." Again, back in Genesis, Hamor was the founder of Shechem, and a Canaanite. And so he says, "Serve the men of Hamor," not Abimelech, this Israelite, or half Israelite at least. He says, "Serve the Canaanite family. You know, put somebody in charge that's a Canaanite. the men of Hamor, the father of Shechem. But why should we serve him or serve Abimelech? Then he gets cocky. He says, if only this people were under my authority, then I would remove Abimelech. You know, I would put him to death and take over his spot. And so he said to Abimelech, now Abimelech's not in front of him. He's just being braggadocious here at this ceremony. They're all drunk, you know, have in their worship service. And that's what they would do when they would worship Baal or whatever. They would have drunken sexual orgies as part of their religious ceremonies. That's why God despised them so much. And so here they are. And it's interesting because there's a parallel in Israelite worship where when you had a harvest, you were to bring the fruits of your harvest in and worship the Lord, but in a godly and an orderly way. Well, Satan always copies and defiles the things of God. And so he's defiled that worship and that ceremony. And so now they're worshiping Baal with their harvests and they're having a drunken orgy. And so Gaal gets up and he's saying, who is this Abimelech? You know, if I were in charge, I'd put him to death and I would take over. And so he cries out to Abimelech in his drunkenness, increase your army and come out. You know, he's making his challenge, even though Abimelech's not there, you know, but he's making this braggadocious challenge to Abimelech. Then Zebul, the ruler of the city, who was in alliance with Abimelech, heard the words of Gaal, the son of Ebed, and his anger was aroused. And he sent messengers to Abimelech secretly, saying, take note, Gaal, the son of Ebed, and his brothers have come to Shechem. And here they are, fortifying the city against you. Now, therefore, get up by night, you and the people who are with you, and lie in wait in the field. And it shall be as soon as the sun is up in the morning that you shall rise early and rush upon the city. And when he and his people who are with him come out against you, you may do to them as you find the opportunity. So Abimelech and all the people who were with him rose by night and lay in wait against Shechem in four companies. So he broke them into four different groups. And when Gaal, the son of Ebed, went out and stood in the entrance of the city gate, Abimelech and the people who were with him rose from lying in wait. And when Gaal saw the people, he said to Zebul, look, people are coming down from the tops of the mountains. Of course, Zebul knew that, but he's trying to deceive this guy and catch him by surprise. And so he says, nah, you just see shadows on the mountains as if they were the men, as if they were men. You know, the sun's coming up and, you know, it's hitting the trees and it just looks like they're guys coming down here, but it's not really. It's just the shadows up on the mountain, you know. And Gaal spoke to him again and said, no, I see people coming down from the center of the land. And another company is coming from the diviner's terebinth tree. In other words, they're coming from this side, they're coming from that side. You know, he's broken up into four different divisions coming down into Shechem. Then Zebul said to him, where indeed is your mouth, or where is your bragging now? With which you said, who is Abimelech that we should serve him? Are not these the people whom you despised? Go out, if you will, and fight with them now. So Gaal went out and leading the men of Shechem and fought with Abimelech. And Abimelech chased him and he fled from him. And many fell wounded to the very entrance of the gate. And Abimelech dwelt in Arumah. And Zebul drove out Gaal and his brothers so that they would not dwell in Shechem. And so Abimelech whoops them. Gaal and whoever's left of his band of guys, they take off, and Zebul drives them out from out of the city. Abimelech's attacking them from outside the city, you know, so all this is going on, and Gaal is gone. But Abimelech goes back to dwelling in Arumah. He doesn't take over Shechem at that point. He's leaving that to Zebul, the guy that's the leader of the city. And it came about on the next day that the people went out into the field and they told Abimelech. People are coming out probably to do their work. And Abimelech hears that the people are coming out. And so he took his people and divided them into three companies, and they lay in wait in the field. And he looked and there were people coming out of the city, and he rose up against them and attacked them. You know, they were the ones that had followed Gaal. So he wants to get vengeance on the city of Shechem now for betraying him and choosing this other guy and leading a rebellion. Then Abimelech and the company was with him. He's in three different companies. So his company rushes forward and stood in the entrance of the gate of the city. So he's got the city gate blocked. His other two companies go through the field, and they're killing everybody in the field. It's out there probably working and tending the fields. So Abimelech fought against the city all that day, and he took the city and killed the people who were in the city, and he demolished the city and sowed it with salt. Now, when all the men of the Tower of Shechem, again, that's probably the Tower of Milo, it's outside the city, but it's a fortress there not too far away, had heard that they entered into the stronghold of the temple of the god Berith. So they go into the temple of Baal thinking that they'll be protected there. They'll find sanctuary there. And it was told that Abimelech that all the men of the Tower of Shechem were gathered together. And Abimelech went to the Mount of Zalmon, and he and the people who were with him. And Abimelech took an axe in his hand and cut down the boughs from the trees and took it and lay it on his shoulder. And he said to the people who were with him, "What you have seen me do, make haste and do as I have done." So each of the people likewise cut down their own bough, or these are branches off of the trees, and followed Abimelech. And they put them against the stronghold and set the stronghold on fire above them. So that when all the people in the Tower of Shechem died, about 1,000 men and women. So they thought they were finding refuge in this sanctuary, this temple of Baal. And Abimelech and his guys, you know, they go gather the wood and they, you know, place it around and probably inside the bottom of this tower, and they light it, and eventually 1,000 men and women in this tower had died. Of course, fulfilling the prophecy or the parable, you know, let Abimelech, the fire come out of Abimelech and destroy Shechem, you know. And so that's what's taking place here. Then Abimelech went to Thebes. Thebes was a town about 13 miles away from Shechem. And he camped against Thebes and took it. So they must have been in alliance with Shechem against Abimelech. And there was a strong tower in the city. And all the men and women, all the people of the city fled there and shut themselves in. Then they went up to the top of the tower. So Abimelech came as far as the tower and fought against it and drew near the door of the tower to burn it with fire. He was going to do the same thing with this tower as he had done with the tower of Shechem. But a certain woman dropped an upper millstone on Abimelech's head and crushed his skull. Then he called quickly to the young man, his armor bearer, and said to him, "Draw your sword and kill me, lest men say of me, 'A woman has killed me.'" Again, you know, last week, Gideon wanted his young son to kill the kings that he had captured because it was considered a disgrace to not be killed by, you know, another general. You know, but if you got this young kid driving you through and you were a king, that's a disgrace. And then you'll go down in history as being, you know, a bad king and a coward and, you know, just a cursed and a disgrace. Well, in those days, it was worse if a woman did it. No offense, ladies. You know, it was a cultural thing. And so this woman drops this millstone. And a millstone was what they would use to grind their wheat and all into powder. You know, so these were heavy things. Jesus said, if you offend one of these little ones, it's better for you that a millstone be tied around your neck and you be thrown into the sea. You know, so if you had a millstone around your neck, you were going right to the bottom, you know. So she drops a millstone on it over the side, and it hits Abimelech, crushes his skull. So he's laying there, you know, not dead yet, but he says to his sword bearer, "Take my sword, run it through me." So, you know, it's not said that Abimelech died by the hands of a woman. You know, what a disgrace that would be, you know. And so his young man thrust him through, and he died. Interestingly enough, Abimelech didn't get his wish. Because in the days of David, about 200 years later, when David was king and he was getting ready for a battle, and there was this idea of getting too close to the tower. It says in 2 Samuel 11:21, "Who struck Abimelech, the son of Jeberesheth," who was, of course, Gideon? "Was it not a woman who cast a piece of a millstone on him from the wall?" So 200 years later, you know, the tale that the woman killed him is still out there. So Abimelech didn't get his, you know, his final glory, you know. A woman killed him. And then verse 55, "And when the men of Israel saw that Abimelech was dead, they departed, every man to his place. Thus God repaid the wickedness of Abimelech, which he had done to his father by killing his 70 brothers. And all the evil of the men of Shechem God returned on their own heads. And on them came the curse of Jotham, the son of Jeroboam." You know, and so God keeps his word. You know, it may not happen right away. It was 3 years before Abimelech got his, but God keeps his word. You know, and all through the scripture says that evil will be punished. Wickedness, there is a price to pay for wickedness. You know, God exalts a nation who is righteous. You know, but the sin of that nation is a reproach. You know, he who exalts himself will be humbled. You know, and so we're not to have any selfish ambition. And it, you know, that's a thing that creeps in very subtly. Pride and selfish ambition. And it's usually people who have pride that don't realize that they have it. You know? Because it's very subtle. And it's something that can, you know, overtake any of us in a very subtle way. And so we need to be constantly before the Lord and humbling ourselves, keeping on our knees, you know, and leaving things in the Lord's hands. You know, if the Lord exalts you, you know, it's for his glory. But if you exalt yourself, you're in for trouble. And we see, again, these biblical principles here laid out in chapter 9. For next week, read chapter 10. We have some more judges that come in and bring peace and some sanity to Israel. So let's pray. Interesting story there in chapter 9. Lord,